Hello, everyone. I hope you're all doing well. It is November 7th, and I wanted to come on here tonight, and I wanted to share something with you. Years ago, 14, something like that, years ago, I published a book. It was called Get Up and Walk, A Stroll with Jesus. And what it was just this collection of essays that I'd written over like the course of like 15 years or something, about God and faith and my journey and my struggles. And I started writing it probably out of college, and just, it was more of a journal, like a, it was a personal journal, just me working through my issues. And then one day I decided that other people might enjoy it or get something from it. So I published it and just put them all together. And I read it the other day, and it's painful to like kind of watch my writing evolve from my mid-20s to, you know, my 40s. But some of the stuff was actually pretty good. And I wanted to come on here and just share one of those essays with you that I particularly enjoyed. The title of it is You Gotta Have Faith. That's not true. The title of it is You Gotta Have Faith, the faith, the faith, which, as if you were born in the 70s or 80s, you know that that's the title of a George Michael song, off his, I believe it was like his debut album when he left Wham and went out on his own. I think the album was entitled Faith. As an aside, I do remember, oh God, it had to have been 9 or 10, being in the car with my mom in the late 80s. And this was like, you know, top of the Billboard charts at the time. He had a song called I Want Your Sex, which was off that album. It was like the debut single off that album. And I remember being in the car with my mom and that song came on. And this is the 80s. Like, it, you know, there, you didn't talk about sex. That wasn't on the media. It wasn't on the radio. We had Saturday morning cartoons. I remember trying to melt into the floorboard of the car. I was so unbelievably horrified and uncomfortable that this song was on and they were saying the word sex and talking about these things while I was sitting next to my mother. It was the worst 3 minutes of my young life. Like, I still have PTSD. Like, when I hear it today, I still kind of like twitch and sweat. Anyway, that's not important. The point was, the name of the essay I wrote was You Gotta Have Faith. So yeah, I wanted to share it with you. So here it is. So there's a game that's played at summer camps and motivational productivity conferences and sixth grade sleepovers. I'm willing to bet that at some point in all of your lives, you've played it in some form, and it's called the trust game. The rules are simple. You stand with your back to your partner, you cross your arms over your chest, you close your eyes, and then you rock backwards on your heels, sending your rigid frame plummeting towards the floor and a certain concussion. That is where your responsibility in this activity ends, and your partner steps up to the plate. You need to have faith that they will reach out and catch you before your skull bounces off the pavement. That's it. Simple as that. You need to completely trust someone with your safety. If they don't catch you, you will fall hard. Faith is a funny thing. Many people treat it like it's tangible, like a valuable thing to be possessed. Well, what do we usually do with valuables? We save them, right? We tend to hoard them, like box them up. We act like squirrels packing away acorns of faith for the upcoming winter of our lives. I was teaching on OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder, in my health class a couple of weeks ago. And there is a specific condition associated with the disorder called hoarding. And hoarding can result from any number of anxiety disorders, all related in some way to OCD. In it, the person affected compulsively saves astronomical amounts of like mundane, weird, everyday things. From like toenail clippings to empty mayonnaise jars, you name it, they save it. There was a story of a woman in one of my texts that was given as an example. She hoarded newspapers, years of them, thousands upon thousands of bound dailies lined her halls from floor to ceiling, like closets, linen cabinets, every inch of free space that she had available was stacked with the news. Walking through her living room must have been like jumping into the pages of like a macabre version of a Dr. Seuss Hall of Records, or like the dank pages of moldy text pushed in on you as they clamored to finish first in a race for the roof. When asked why she kept the papers, her reply was simple. Someone might want to read them one day. What if her granddaughter, who hadn't been born yet, wanted to know what the weather had been like on February 10th, 2004 in Laguna Beach, California? Well, she was going to make sure that she could. That was her rationale. That thought brought her comfort and eased her anxiety. She felt that she needed to save these things, had to. If she didn't, an unexplainable sense of terror washed over her, fear of the unknown. What if I throw them away and then somebody needs them? What then? Honestly, I think that sometimes we do the same thing with faith. We hold on to it for the what ifs. I also think that at other times we misappropriate our allocations of faith. We believe in things every day without even really thinking about it. I sat in this chair to begin writing, believing that it would support my weight. This is an analogy that's been used many times in sermons across the country, across the globe. I didn't systematically test it with a pulley and lever system rigged with weights to see where the stress limits were. I just sat. We have faith that gravity will hold us firm to the earth. Water will come out of the tap when we push up on the handle, and our favorite television shows will be on at 8:30 sharp because we believe that TV Guide wouldn't lie to us. As an aside, that right there shows how long ago this was written. TV Guide, TV shows being on at a certain time. Anyway, Benjamin Franklin believed in death and taxes. Peter Pan believed he could fly. Mary Poppins was certain that a spoonful of sugar helped the medicine go down. I have faith in the fact that tomorrow morning, the sun will crest the Santa Ana Mountains to the east and set in a brilliant flash in the Pacific Ocean just behind Catalina Island in the evening. Why? Because every day since August of 1978 until now, that's what's happened. I have just less than 17,000 days of experience that says the sun's going to make a repeat performance tomorrow, like clockwork, to coin a phrase. No variation, no question about it. It's a safe bet. It's when we come to the unknown that our grip on faith becomes a bit tighter. We seem to be less willing to toss our trust around when it comes to situations where we could lose or get hurt or seem foolish. Faith in love? Does he really love me? Is she cheating? Faith in humanity? Ultimately, our faith in the Lord? Is he really there? Is he listening to me? Does he really want me to do this? Why would he let this happen? Our faith in God seems the hardest to come by at times. At least it does for me. Out of all the aforementioned things, God can seem the less tangible, like the hardest to reach out and touch, the hardest to see. If the phrase seeing is believing is true, then it's no wonder that it may be hard at times to put our trust in God. We have to believe that a God that we can't see with our eyes is going to lead us by the hand through the darkest times of our lives. That can be a bit disconcerting. How do we know? Well, as I pondered this, the Lord seemed fit to give me a great parallel. At a Starbucks, no less, I was having coffee the other day, and I happened to see a man who had a beautiful golden lab sitting at his feet a few tables away. The dog was unbelievably well behaved. It just sat there, unmoving. It didn't make a sound. It didn't really even move its head much at all. It just followed everything with its eyes as people passed. When the man was finished with his coffee, he sat up and said something. I couldn't hear to the dog. It immediately jumped to attention. The harness that was strapped to the dog's chest had a handle that stood rigid about a foot off the dog's back. And there was a green piece of fabric on the side that identified it as a seeing eye dog. The man grabbed hold of the handle and the two just took off towards the parking lot, just like that. No questions asked, the man put his complete faith in a dog. He trusted it with his life. They came to a curb and the dog slowed down. It let him feel the height difference of the curb. The dog scanned the lot and then it led him to the sidewalk away from the busy traffic and he followed. This fascinated me. The fact that he completely let go of his power, like his control, and handed over to a dog. Well, I got intrigued and I went home to do a little experiment. I originally intended to do a day in the life of a sightless person, but it turned into about an hour broken into 15-minute segments because I just couldn't handle it. Here's what I learned. I don't even trust myself. As crazy as it seems, I don't even believe in my ability to keep myself safe. So let me explain. I stood in my living room and couches, coffee table, chairs, entertainment unit, television, lamp. I knew where they were. I put them there when I moved in. I know how many steps it is from the kitchen to the couch, the coffee table to the door jamb of my bedroom, my bed to the counter in my bathroom. I know this because I counted beforehand. I took time. I actually took notes. Even with this knowledge, knowledge that I knew for certain, the second the lights went out, doubt crept in. Now, I knew how far away the sharp edge of the coffee table was from the kitchen counter that I had my hand on. But when that blindfold slipped over my eyes, all sorts of like self-preservation alarms went off inside my head, telling me to rethink my impending journey across the living room. Was it really six steps or five? What if? With knowledge that I knew for sure, I still walked like a tentative old man, with shuffling baby steps and my arms waving out for support, trying to fend off any potential shin-cracking obstacles I knew shouldn't be there. Well, so much for my faith. What if? I made it to the couch and quickly lifted my blindfold just in case, half expecting to catch my love seat like impishly tiptoeing across the room to trade spots with the dining room chair. No, everything was just as I left it. Six paces to the kitchen, not five. Why was I so nervous? Where was the anxiety coming from? How in the world could that man grab hold of the harness and with complete trust and satisfaction in his decision, give his life and well-being to a golden lab on a busy street in the middle of the day when I was having trouble crossing the cavernous divide of my tiny living room? The answer's faith. He had faith in that dog. He had faith in that dog's trainers. And I have to believe, to be walking around a busy street, sightless, using a dog as your eyes, he must have had some faith in the Lord. The problem for me is that at times, I feel it would be easier to grab hold of that handle and let a strange dog lead me through traffic than give complete control to Jesus. At least I can reach down and pet the dog. We don't like to relinquish control, at least I don't. I like control. It makes me feel good. I think that we like to feel proactive in our lives. Look around a Southern California freeway at rush hour. If you could put the definition of futile proactivity, excuse me, into tangible action, it would have to be in the form of the aggravated, impatient gridlock motorist. Why do we change lanes in traffic? Does it really get us to our destination any faster? Well, after, at the time, 14 years of experimentation, I can answer a vehement no. It just gives me the illusion of control. Like I said before, it just makes me feel good. That's not true. In actuality, it just seems to infuriate me to the point of like blood vessel bursting rage when the lane I just cut off two people to get out of speeds up the instant I leave it, and the blue minivan that was three cars behind me scoots past and puts off out of sight as I stew in my now frozen parking lot. In our hearts, we take control of our lives and we expect God to follow suit and stick to the path that we've laid out. We know what we want. We know how we want things to turn out. We know. And when it doesn't happen exactly that way, and like that way being our way, we get upset. The moment we let selfish anger and envy and hatred fill our heads, more importantly, our hearts, we give Satan a foothold. And trust me, when he finds one, he doesn't like to let go. It's about the whole destiny versus coincidence argument. One of the biggest problems for us humans is that we can only see God's plan in hindsight. It's only when we stop, turn around, and look back that we see the path we've been following. The what-ifs and the if-onlys kind of fall away when you look back at the big picture of your past. The Lord has led you along to make you who you are. The only way that you could be you is if you did exactly what you've done up until this point in your life. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, the path behind us is lit by our experience. But when we turn back around and we face the future, we're faced with nothing but darkness. And that's scary. It's the unknown. We have no control. The wind rustles bushes and a dusty tumbleweed rolls by, and for a second you feel alone. And that's when Satan attacks, when you feel vulnerable. He attacks with subtle suggestions, not with power and vengeance. He's the one who tells us that we can do it alone, by ourselves. He's the one that whispers that we should blaze our own path through the darkness. Get what's ours. Show the world who's boss. God, who needs God? I can do this by myself. I am powerful. But at those moments, what we often don't see is the truth standing right in front of our faces. While Satan is standing behind us, busy pouring lie after lie into our open ears, the Lord is right there waiting. Waiting for us to accept his love and trust him, to have faith in him. Waiting for us to follow him. The reason we can't see the path in front of us is because we're walking behind the Lord. He blocks our view of what's coming. That's why we've got to have faith. Faith in Jesus, that he knows where he's going. Keep reminding yourself, it's a walk with the Lord. So when you get to rough ground, admit defeat. When you're looking up at that rocky hillside, don't get too full of yourself. When the lights go out and shadows of doubt are swirling around you, don't try to walk around your living room by yourself. You may walk into the coffee table. It will hurt. Reach out for help. Sometimes the right route from point A to point B isn't a straight line. Yes, it may be the shortest, but is it what God wants? Don't take the course you think is best. There's a good chance it's not the one God has in mind for you. You may end up falling and getting hurt. Or even more frightening is that God may actually grant you your wish and give you what you deserve. I don't want that. Don't risk it. So, faith. You gotta have faith. Well, what is faith? How do we get it? Where in the world does it come from? What made it so easy for that man to grab hold of that plastic bar and let a dog lead him through the trials of the Starbucks parking lot, let alone life? A better question is, how can we trust a God we can't see or touch to lead us when some of us don't even trust ourselves? That's a question only you can answer. You have to choose to let go, choose to relinquish control, and hand over the reins of your life to Jesus. What's the worst that could happen? Your life goes on status quo? What if you let go and you fall? Well, maybe that's what the Lord had in mind for you. No one ever said being a follower of Jesus would be easy or painless or result in a fun-filled, prosperous life. Actually, it's spoken about time and time again how difficult it is and will be to follow Christ. In his first letter to the scattered Christian church, in 1 Peter, Peter said, "Dear friends, don't be surprised at the painful trials you are suffering, as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed." So trust in him, that he's leading you where you need to go to become who he needs you to be. Cross your arms, close your eyes, fall back. He'll catch you. Follow his lead. Trust him. He knows the way. More precisely, he is the way. He'll get you there. Just have faith and follow him. Reach out, take his hand, and let him lead you through the rough times. However, if you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but praise God that you bear his name. Just remember, guys, you gotta have faith. So that's the chapter, that's the essay I wrote many years ago that I enjoyed. I actually did blindfold myself and walk around my, at the time, tiny apartment as an experiment after seeing that guy in the Starbucks with his dog. And I actually did cheat and look because I was terrified. And that stuck with me. And that moment, that vision, that analogy, like, resonated with me. And that's the reason that I wrote this thing. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you took something away from it. I appreciate you spending the last 20 minutes with me and hanging out with me on this Wednesday night in November. And I hope you guys have a great night. And thanks a lot. And God bless, guys.